This is the Pete and Sebastian Show with Pete Corielli and Sebastian Maniscalco.
We've already said goodbye.
Unbelievable show today. Our guest is Frank Grillo. His latest movie, Lamborghini.
Thinking of a car. A car that doesn't exist yet. One that is as strong and powerful and as unforgettable as the bull. I'm going to build it.
But we get into a lot with this guy.
Yeah.
58 years old, right? Been around Hollywood for close to, 40 years. Been in a ton of movies, right? And we found this guy quite fascinating. It's the first time you've ever met him. I went out to dinner with him years ago. But really, really a great guest.
Fun time we had with Frank.
I just wanted to give you a hint on some of the things that Frank and Pete and I talked about. This guy is a crier, right? Not too many podcasts talk about men crying. I got to tell you right now, as I look over the table, did you just take a nap?
No, my neck. I can't turn my neck. Why? What's wrong?
You just looked at me and you were like,
I'm trying to.
I got to go to the airport. By the way, I gotta let the listeners in.
Plenty of time there.
The time right now is 4:04. Pete's flight is 10:40. We're looking at 6 hours and 40 minutes, right? So I said, hey, Pete, after we're done shooting this, you could stick around here. He goes, nah, I gotta get near the airport.
Right.
This guy's going to leave 6.5 hours before his flight to get to the airport. My father don't even do that. Really? And he's worried about missing his flight.
Well, yeah, you get cocky. Next thing you know, you're running late and you're going, why did I do that? For what? For what? To sit back there by myself? Wait, it's a nice gesture, but that's,
Have you ever missed a flight in your life?
One time, from out here, I told you, one time, with Brewer, we're going to Hawaii, and I missed the gig because of it, didn't miss it, we missed getting there a day early.
Because of him, we were late, or just because you overslept, what was the reason?
Because the traffic coming through, we cut through the canyon, and it was like a tree was down, and it was bumping a bump of traffic, and we missed the flight by a couple of minutes running there, so... But in general, it's chaos at LA.
It's chaos. So
this guy was a great hang. We had a blast with him. The hair alone, wow. Yeah.
So 58 years old, doesn't even use dye in his hair. Not really one gray hair.
Which I don't know if I believe that.
You'll find out on today's cast with Frank Grillo. All right, Frank, thanks for joining us here.
Yeah, man.
I haven't seen you in at least, 7 years.
Long time ago.
And I've been following you on Instagram and your career and whatnot. I thought you'd be an interesting guest for many, many reasons. But I want to start, for those of you guys that don't know, you're not only an actor, right? But you're into martial arts, boxing. You're in incredible shape. I don't know what you got on your skin. It looks like a fucking oil.
I know.
It's my greasy Italian skin, man.
Man, you look... Listen, I know you're only a few years older than me, but goddamn, you look fantastic, bro.
I'm old.
It's good to know it never ends. You're going to be... women are going to hit on you in the coffin at your wake. Let's just give him a kiss. We give Frankie a kiss.
I do have a 30-year-old girlfriend.
Oh, do you? Jesus Christ.
I always vowed not to be that guy. And I've been married my whole life. And then now I'm not married anymore. And somehow this girl and I'm like, I can't be that guy. I'm not going to be that guy.
Right.
I will not be that guy. And I am that guy.
It's okay. Yeah. It's all right. Listen. So you're in great shape. Is health and fitness always been something that you have been into, or did you get into this later on in life?
No, it's since I was the weirdo in my, again, I come from an Italian, my father comes from Italy. I come from an Italian immigrant family. The grandmother, the grandfather lived in the garage, the whole thing, right? Nobody lifted weights. You pushed wheelbarrows. That's what you did, right? You dug holes and you did stuff like that. You weren't getting paid for physical, activity. It was stupid to do. I made them buy me weights when I was like 12, like Joe Weider weights that you filled up with sand, and I was in my garage. And I always was watching what I was eating. I went on a kick when I was like 15. All I would eat was peanuts and raisins.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't want to eat anything. And I wrestled my whole life. So food became kind of the enemy because I was always cutting weight. Mm. So it's been a life, literally, since I was a boy, I've been involved in fitness, the pursuit of knowledge of diet. And yeah. You know, I do everything from jujitsu to boxing. I ride motocross bikes. Like, everything is physical for me. And then I act, too. Like, it's that. It's, you know, that's why I don't have a lot of friends that are actors. Because, you know, like, I'll walk into a party and they're talking about Chekhov. And I'm like, ah, this is not my thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's a great thing, but it's just not my thing.
Right. Yeah, so. I'm taking it all in. I'm taking it all in right now.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and the last time I think I talked to you, you were going around the world. Talking to people with different
fight world. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Talk about that. What was your...
Yeah. I was a big Bourdain fan. I loved Anthony Bourdain. I mean, I was obsessed with him. Just what he was doing and who he was and how he kind of melded that together and created something that was singular, right? So my partner and I, Joe Carnahan, I had an idea. We had a deal at Netflix. I had an idea, like, it's kind of Bourdain-esque. I love... not just fighting. I love the culture of fighting, every different culture and why people do it. So we pitched this thing to Netflix where I travel around these locations and do this show. And, you know, we did a whole thing, a deck, and they bought it in the room. And I put a team together of like 30 people. And I went to each of these countries and kind of embedded myself in the culture, not a tutorial about how to do Muay Thai. Mm-hmm. It was about why these people in this part of the world, you know, how Muay Thai became in Thailand became such a part of their culture. And it was great. It kind of changed my DNA.
So what did you learn coming out of that experience? What's the one thing that you walked away with going, wow, that was amazing?
Yeah, it's a great question. What I learned was most fighting styles and most fighting cultures evolve out of oppressively poor places. Mm-hmm. People who need to fight. It's the only thing that could possibly get them out of poverty. And it was amazing. But they're very proud people. Like, I did this thing in Myanmar, which used to be Burma, and it's called Letwe. And it's basically Muay Thai, only you could headbutt. And they have 12-year-old kids doing it. And I have three sons. And I was taken aback by the damage being done to these kids. So I offered to kind of, you know, bring in a doctor and some ice. I mean, kids have like hematomas. No, they wouldn't accept that. I offered to give them equipment, to leave equipment with them. They wanted to bang on banana trees.
Wow.
It's, and they're very, you know, same with Africa. I went to Israel. Just life-changing experiences with these people.
Now, for those of you that don't know what Muay Thai is, what is it? Like, what kind of martial arts?
Yeah,
is
they
that?
Call it the art of the eight limbs. So it's fists, it's feet, it's knees, it's elbows, right? Mm-hmm. And Letwe, which is a derivative of that, is then you could headbutt too. So imagine your 12-year-old son being headbutted in the jaw.
The thing with the headbutt, I got to ask about that. How come the guy who hits you, how come he's not hurt?
He does. They all get hurt. I mean, you should.
But in the
see-
movies, I do that to you. I'm sipping coffee and you're knocked out. What the fuck is that about? Like, how come I'm not?
Well,
knocked
in the
out
movies,
too?
You see guys do this and they punch somebody in the face, and the guy goes. It's interesting you say that because I do a lot of those kinds of movies with Nick Cage, yeah. and my thing is, if I have to do these movies, and some of them I love to do and some of them I have to do, I want to make that part of it authentic.
You know,
because a lot of it is just like ridiculous. Right. You know, it's like the $6 million man.
Well, then what would be authentic? You headbutt and you both pass out?
You both pass out. You're both going down.
Jeez. And also, I'm focused, by the way, on something you said a little earlier. Sold it in the room. What is that like? What the fuck does that like? How does that even work? Like... You know, I never had that. We might not even get back to you, Corielli. Get the hell out of here.
You've sold shit in the room.
Come on, you.
I've walked out of a room and I've asked my reps, I go, did we sell that? But never like, yeah, no, we'll go with it. Yeah.
By the way, I was like, usually it's like, you know, you're doing good, yeah, right? And you walk out and you're like, okay. And the call comes and it's like, we feel good, blah, blah, blah. We need one more thing.
Yeah.
They just said, yeah, go with it. And I was like,
Were they like, Kathy's going to write up the paperwork. You get started.
Yes. Basically, that was it. What do you think you need an episode? I said, by the way, I think I said a million. I don't know what the fuck I need.
But don't you even say to them, okay, I still got to go to Amazon. Pump the fucking brakes.
No, right? Because we had made two movies for Netflix. And by the way, it was a different time.
Yeah.
Like, we made a movie for $6 million. We got like 11 million.
Yeah.
You know, it was like a different time. That doesn't happen now.
Right, right.
And so we were in business with them. And they were confident that we could execute it because we had done two great things for them.
Yeah.
And it was funny, man. And then I was on the road. And then like any jerk, I was complaining. I'd be like, I'm not staying in that hotel.
Like, oh, man.
You're in a place that doesn't really have, you know, the St. Regis.
Yeah.
You have to stay in that hotel.
Yeah.
I have to be comfortable. I'm old.
I hear you.
I want to rewind. You said something that you got three sons, right?
Yeah.
I got a son. He's only 4 years old.
I know. I watch him.
Right.
I've watched him grow up.
So have you taught or have your kids, your sons, got into martial arts, and what are the benefits that you've seen? Because I took my kid to a martial arts class at Gracie,
right?
Like, and I wanted to have him watch first before he got in. Have all three of them taken classes?
Three of them have taken. My oldest son, who's 25, he boxes. He's been boxing since I took him when he was 9. I threw him in a gym in New York City, which we were the only white people. And all my friends were black and Puerto Rican and Dominican. And they basically were his quasi father. Like, they raised him. I would throw him in there and leave him there. And in the beginning, he didn't like it. Now he's had a couple of smoker fights and stuff. He's a good boxer. And, he's a beautiful human being. I've taken my other sons. I've taught them boxing, the same thing. And they're so respectful. They've become such good kids from boxing,
mm-hmm.
and martial arts is the same thing. You'll never find a martial artist or even a real boxer out in the street looking to be a jerk off.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just, it teaches you discipline. It teaches you community, which I think a lot of boys need, you know, to feel. My kids don't play sports. Like, I grew up playing football and lacrosse and I wrestled. I was never home after school. My kids don't do that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to force them to, but they will box. So that's kind of where we've landed. Right. But I think every parent, girl or boy, I think martial arts is a great way to raise a child that won't be necessarily afraid of the world.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Which I think now is important.
Do you walk around, with a confidence because you have a brown belt or whatever belt you have, with like an aura of,
yeah,
taking you out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not afraid of anybody.
Right.
That's what it is. I've never had.
How many people? Wait, one second. How many people are you afraid of?
Most. Yeah. No. I know, Frank, you're the kind of guy, though, that, like, if I get out of a car and I'm coming at you hot with my words, when you're calm, the calm ones, I back off.
I know right away that's some martial arts shit, that they're disciplined.
I would walk away 99 times out of 100.
And probably call me buddy a few times. Hey, like, buddy.
No, I got a standard thing, because it does happen. I got a standard thing. I say, are you okay? And it kind of jars people. It's like, no, I'm not okay. Yeah, my wife's busting my balls. And I'm like, all right, get back in your car, man. It's all good. Because the reality is, I can't hurt somebody. I mean, that's the reality.
You
know what I mean? It's the reality. And I don't want to. I mean, I don't want to, but, I've gotten myself in trouble, you know, with one problem I had. And again, the guy hit me, and it ended up with me trial by jury trying to take my life away because this guy said I did something that I didn't.
Wow.
And it wound up being his girlfriend who testified against him and said, no, he started it with him.
Oh, wow.
In any event, you learn that when you're in the public eye and you have something to lose, like, you know, houses and careers, I don't have an ego about how cool or tough I am. I'm 58 years old. I'm like, it's all good. You're a tough guy. But I'm not afraid of anybody. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I've been doing this my whole life.
I'll be honest. Have you ever woken up a day in your life and knowing you have this skill like, just think to yourself, I'd love to kick the shit out of somebody today.
Every day. I live in L.A. I mean, I'm in this, the entertainment business. I mean, there's more jerk-offs in this business than walk the planet. It's amazing. And nobody's ever been chin-checked. Everybody's a tough guy.
Right.
Chin-checked. Yeah. Oh, I've never even heard of that one.
Bro, you're like Sean Penn with better hair.
No, he's got the pen thing going, right? Like, cut, rip, pats, cool hang. Like, you know, your hole here looks like it hasn't been indoors since, like, 1975. Your neck hasn't been under a roof since 1975.
Bro, I'm a construction guy. I'm Italian. I'm Italian.
Just when I thought I was a man, this guy comes strolling in. All of a sudden, I feel like a suburban housewife.
Well, bro, you're like a dying breed. I mean, especially being out here in Hollywood, you seem like a guy that would have been in Hollywood, maybe in the 50s and 60s. You have like that.
Yeah, that's kind of the, you know, it's kind of the place I've landed. You know, I didn't volunteer for it, but the stuff that I do, and you know, just to clarify, I'm kind of just left of center of mainstream Hollywood. Like, the movies I do are, a lot of them are Netflix movies or Hulu movies. I do some big studio movies, but I've landed somewhere because the pay is really good and I want to take care of my family. I've landed somewhere in this kind of weird place where maybe one out of every three people recognize me, but one out of every five people know my name. It's that thing.
Well, even like with the Marvel movie, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't you kind of back out of that because you didn't like the development of the character a little bit?
Yeah, I, you know.
Which is like,
yeah,
hey,
it was supposed
Marvel
to
movie,
go,
it
was
it,
supposed
right?
to go one way, right? It was, you sign on for seven movies and the first two were great and it was supposed to go one way and it just didn't go that way, and not because of me, but it didn't go that way. And then they wanted me to come back to the Avengers. Joe Russo called me and I go, I'm not coming back. Like, you got to come back.
Not
I go, I'm not coming back. And I'm an asshole. And I'm like, why? And I go, what do you want me to come back for a scene? I said, you know, first of all, I never got the money that I was supposed to on the back end because supposedly the movie's still in the red. And so I'm like, I'm not coming back. And then my son said, you should do it. And my oldest son, he goes, it's the Avengers. It's an iconic scene. Yeah. They're replaying an iconic scene from the first Captain America. And I looked at him. I wanted to smack him in the face. And then I went, you're right. Yeah. and I went and did it. And I don't regret it. But yeah, I mean, I wasn't happy with it. It was like, it's too bad that. But I just got hired by James Gunn, who directed all the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, because now he's running DC. So I'm doing Creature Commandos in DC for which we just shot, which will come out in 2024. So I jumped teams.
Wow.
Yeah. Nice. Man, I'm like Deion Sanders.
Yeah, man.
I just want you to know, Cap, it's in personal. It kind of feels personal.
You play Lamborghini, right?
Oh, yeah.
Now, did you have any contact with the Lamborghini family in like researching the role? And did you talk to them in regards to like, just to get some history and whatnot?
No, you are good, you. Very good. Nah, you got a gift. I did. Banderas was going to do it. And he had dropped out 10 days before principal photography. So Bobby Maresco, who was the director and the writer, he called me. And he said, I got a movie, Lamborghini, based on the son's book. His son wrote a book about him. And it's in Rome. I go, yep. He goes, let me send you a script. Not necessary. I'm in. Right? I go, you're bringing me to Italy to play Lamborghini. You know, Banderas was going to do it. It's got to be good. Before you ask somebody else, I'll say yes. So I said yes. I read it. And they had already shot half of the movie with the younger Lamborghini, and I was going to shoot the second half as he's an adult. And his son, who wrote the book about him, was on set every day. So I got to do as much research as I can in those 10 days, and then I had him. Tonino was with me, and through a translator, I'd constantly ask him questions until he wanted to punch me in the face. And it was a trip, you know, because I don't get to do stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm Italian. I'm an Italian immigrant. Yeah. Going back to Italy to work. We were in Emilia Romagna. We traveled down through Florence to Rome. We shot a bunch in Rome. At one point, I called my mother. She was alive at the time. And I said, Ma, why did we leave? Why did we leave Italy? She said, where are you? I said, I'm in Florence. She goes, we didn't live in Florence. We lived in Calabria. It's not Florence.
Yeah.
But again, another thing that was life-changing and brought me back to my Italian roots.
That's great. How nice is that to shoot a movie in the homeland that your parents immigrated from? Had you driven a Lamborghini prior to the movie?
No. I've never driven a Lamborghini or a Ferrari. And I drove a couple of, like, 29 million euro cars that they were in, like, museums in Rome. I had, like, cops around me. I'm like, oh, am I going to steal the car? Where am I going to go?
Yeah. But, you know, freaking showbiz, man. And it's like why I tell my daughter, and I know we need certain jobs out there that people do, but I'm like, to do something that you love, like, you're sitting home, and then 10 days later, you're in Rome driving Lamborghinis.
I'm in Rome. What the fuck is going on? I'm in Rome.
And you never know when shit like that's going to happen. And you can walk out of here and you got a message. Hey, life changing.
It's happened 10, if not 20 times.
Unbelievable.
It's unbelievable.
And sometimes the fall is bad too, right? You know, like sometimes something sometimes you're about to go to Rome to do something and they go, don't get in the car.
And that's, the other thing is there's been a bunch of movies that I was excited to go. I was just going to go to the Basque country in Spain to do a movie. And in the 11th hour, I got a phone call. It's like, nah, we're not going to do it. We can't do it. Can you do it next? I'm like, nah, don't. If it's not happening now, I can't do it. But, you know, so there's that. And there's also, you get offered a shit ton of money for 5 days on a movie that you know you're going to have to explain your way out of at some point.
Oh, yeah.
But, again, growing up the way I grew up, somebody offers you seven figures for 5 days, you go, I don't give a shit what it is.
Yeah.
I'm not Daniel Day-Lewis. I'm going to do it. Right. You know what I mean? And I do it. And I do it and I hold my breath for 5 days and I do as good as I can, but then I go to the bank.
Right. We must be talking, as they say, B movies sometimes. Is that what you're saying?
Although most movies I see, I mean, like I just went and saw Oppenheimer and went, wow, that's a movie, right?
Oh, okay.
Most movies that I see, I mean, there's what, Meg 2 with Jason Statham?
Right.
Is that an A movie?
I tell you whatever it is, it made more money than my left foot.
That's right. So I don't follow any B movie, A movie, C movie. It doesn't matter.
You don't owe an apology for whatever movie you do.
No, but listen, sometimes you do.
I feel that way about some bits I've said. You know what I mean?
Like, sometimes you just that? Like, sorry. You want your $2.99 back? I'll give it to you.
Love the purge you were in, though, man. God damn, those were fun. Those are chilling.
Those bought me a house.
Freaking chilling. Yeah. Those movies. Yeah.
Those bought me a house. Right?
Yeah.
So do you ever, as an actor, in the back of your mind, going, "Is this going to end? Am I?" Because I often talk to people. I go, "There's times I put on tickets, and I'm like, are they going to sell?" Is there a fear that you live in not working?
Absolutely. The ice cream's going to melt every day.
Yeah.
It's like, of course. And it's never the case or hasn't been the case, but I'm kind of glad that I think that way. It's kind of smart to think that way. Do you know? Because at some point, it is going to, and I've done movies with all of the big guys, you know, and I'm friends with Stallone and, like, you know, and they still think that way. Like, I'm like, really? Oh, this isn't going to go away? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm like, you know, when is it going to slow down? Or when are the salaries going to start really dropping? When do I need to adjust my living style?
Right.
Do you know? Because I'm not the guy, like, I have beautiful retirement thing. But I never think like that. I'm like, I'll probably get my money as soon as I'm 60. I'm going to take the money.
Yeah.
As soon as I can get the money, I'm going to take the money.
Yeah.
But I live with that every day. And this past year, I lived with it a lot. Because I spent more. I don't spend money, and I bought this house, and then I put a lot of money into it, and then the strike happened, and I'm like, uh-oh. You know, because I'm so used to money, and it got to a point where I'd get a call to go do a movie. They want me for 2 days, and it would be six figures, mid to high six figures for 2 days.
Wow.
I'm like, I could do that forever.
Yeah.
Damn.
You know what I mean?
Have you ever been on a movie, like one of them that you say, like, you owe an apology for? and a great opportunity came in, and you can't do it because you want, as you would say, this shit thing here I'm doing now, I can't get out of it.
Yeah, it's happened a couple times. And that's the lesson. It's like, you know, maybe sit at home and don't be an idiot.
Have you ever been like to your agent, fuck it, I'm just walking off the set. I don't give a shit about this.
You know one thing you never do? You never walk off a set as an actor. You never, ever, even if you have a problem.
Yeah.
I've had that, like where me and the director have, you know, I've threatened his life and stuff. And my agent would say, don't leave the set. I said, but he threw me off. I'm like, don't leave the set.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lesson for you.
Well, I have one question before I forget. Yeah. You had to have auditioned for Rick Grimes in Walking Dead. Did you not?
I feel like you would have been a great Rick Grimes. No, I've never seen Walking Dead. Who plays him?
Lincoln something. I can't remember the guy's name.
Oh, yeah, Andrew Lincoln.
Yeah, he was great. Yeah, he was great.
They were great. My friend Bernthal was on that show, too. You know, my problem is I don't get to audition anymore. It's just like, you know, it's been like offers. But I don't get offers necessarily that I want. I mean, I just get a lot of offers, but a lot of them I pass on.
But do you sometimes, like if Scorsese wanted you to audition, are you going to audition?
I have. I auditioned for Scorsese, and we wound up talking. I went to audition for him at the Directors Guild in New York City. I did the table read. It was, so to get this. I go in, I talk to Scorsese at the Directors Guild for an hour. We wound up talking about our pediatrician. We had the same pediatricians. So I get a call from my agent. They go, hey, Marty. I'm like, Marty who? They go, Martin Scorsese wants you to come and do the table read for The Irishman. It's a script by Steve Zaley. I said, I know what the script is. You know the movie, The Irishman. Right?
He's in it.
Yeah, you're in it. You're in it. I just watched it again. That's right. You're in it. And then I just watched it again with De Niro, and which was, I'm like, what is he thinking to himself? He's standing next to, he's acting with, I mean, it was amazing. Yeah. Me and my son watched it. I'm like, good for him, man. That's fucking great. In any event, I'm on the way to the table read. I was living in Tribeca at the time. They go, oh, by the way, there's a list of guys who are going to be there. It's you, De Niro, Scorsese, Pesci, Keitel. I'm going, what?
Oh,
what?
Yeah.
Who else is there?
Pacino there?
Pacino sat next to me. He had the glasses. De Niro's sitting here, Pacino's sitting there reaching, talking to each other. I'm going, I don't fucking believe this.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I know.
And then he would say, like, what's this word over here? I'm like, and then Al's going, leave him alone. Read the words. I can't believe. And Pesci, it was surreal. Yeah, it was surreal. Crazy. So that was one of the times where they were offering me a role and I wasn't available.
Oh, man.
What was the role? Do you remember?
It was a small role. It was not even a role. You know, I would have done it because of Scorsese, but it wasn't a role that was, you know.
Yeah.
And when you're in a movie with those guys, it's kind of hard to pop.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But you want to work with Scorsese.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? You want to be around Scorsese.
I know. Yeah. Like, when he did the freaking, you were talking about last night on stage about doing the scene with De Niro and Pesci. How do you not be like, this can't be real. This is like truly surreal, right?
Yeah, but I didn't feel for a second that you felt intimidated.
No, I didn't.
Because as an actor, I could always see, see the signs when a guy's nervous, right?
Really?
Yes. And I never got the feeling you didn't think you belonged there.
Oh, yeah. Well, it should have been there maybe the first take. No, for me, it was surreal. I mean, like, just like you're sitting there with all those guys. And
we grew up
We grew up with them. And next thing you know, you're doing a movie with them. But is there ever a movie role that you passed on that similar to the Scorsese, like, oh, I'm not available, that you wanted to do but you weren't available to do it, that went and the movie went on to success? Like, do you ever kick yourself in the ass, go, oh fuck, I wish I would have taken
no,
the role?
No, because I'm not Matt Damon, you know. I'm not getting those kind of movies where I'd go, I pass, because there's probably not anything, excuse me, behind it that I would pass for, right?
Yeah.
But there have been movies where I was so, it was me and the other guy. For instance, Green Book. You know the movie Green Book?
Yeah, I was
in it. Oscars? You were in it. What a fun girl. That's right. You were in it.
Every movie's talking about it. It's nice. Nice to hear.
So Nick.
You know Nick?
I know Nick. Well, we were going to do another movie together. He comes up. I'm at the Soho House. He comes and goes, Frank Grillo, I can't believe you're sitting here. I go, me either. And he says, I was just up at CAA. I have a movie. And by the way, lots of guys come up to me and go, I got a movie.
Yeah.
And he goes, it's about my father. And my father loved you. And we were up at CAA just talking about you. I said, oh, well, that's very nice. I mean, send me the script. It's Green Book. And I read the script and I go, holy shit, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. So I call my agent. I go, dude, you have to read this. He goes, no, no. He goes, we're already into it. He goes, you're one of one. They really want you. And oh my God, who directed the film? Bobby Farley. They go, they're going to set up a call with you and Farley. I said, wow, Farley's directing this movie? That's like a stretch for him, but he's great. And you'll talk to Bobby and we're going to make a deal. I said, oh, wow, this is great. And then they told me who was playing the other guy. And I was like, oh, this has pedigree all over it, right? 3 days pass and I don't hear anything. And I call my agent. I go, what's going on with Greenberg? He goes, oh, it's we don't think it's anything. It's Bobby's talking to
Vigo.
Vigo. I said, Vigo? It's an Italian guy. I said, Vigo. I mean, I love Vigo. Vigo's amazing, but Vigo's not right for this movie. They go, no, we don't think he's going to do it. It's small. And well, there you go. There's the rest of the story. And I knew in my heart of hearts, like that was going to be a special film.
Right.
And you were in that one too, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, but Frank, you know, you got to sometimes step back and look at like 99% of all actors are out there doing, you know, not working.
Yeah, but there's 1% that are doing a lot better.
That's what I look at. I like the way you think, bro. Keep it going, man. Yeah, I hear you. Vigo, man. You want to just give him a call and go, guy,
come on, man. Do me
down,
a favor.
Step down, guy.
Do me a favor.
I mean,
how many Oscar nominations do you need?
Finish with the Lord of the Rings. Take a fucking vacation.
Speaking of vacations, do you build in time off, or are you just constantly working?
Time off. He's going to jog home.
My father took one vacation his whole life with us to the Catskills. Three days, we went to a little hut.
Let's be honest, by the way. If I was at a hotel pool and he came down with the family, I'd be like, oh, this is going to be a problem. This guy's going to white trash this thing up. I see all the tattoos. I think they're going to be doing cannonballs.
No, spiritual tattoos, man.
But he's going to be ripped all the way. They're going to be looking at his stomach and shit, right?
But what? It's just a bunch of lumps.
Even though you were raised with a work ethic, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
And especially with having kids and family and whatnot, do you ever look back and go, maybe I was working too much, or any regrets about like being away? And because I deal with this, your kids are at home, you're in Montana for 3 months doing a movie,
and they're not coming to Montana.
That's
the dilemma. That's the bittersweet part of having some success is, you know, and I don't go to Montana. I go to like Croatia.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Bulgaria.
Yeah. Wow.
And, you know, now my kids are 50, the two little ones are not little, 15 and 18. But when they were young, I was gone for long periods of time.
Yeah.
And I had done a TV series that was out here called Kingdom for a few years. And I was trying to get back every weekend, and it was exhausting. And at some point I realized they didn't really want to see me every weekend because they knew I was leaving.
It was like a
thing. So, I do kind of, there's parts of their lives that I've missed that I regret.
Yeah.
You know, I know people say, I don't have any regrets. I go, well, I do. The car I bought that I shouldn't have bought, and this, I didn't see my kids as much.
Yeah.
But you know, I've made up for it, you know, and I was never expecting to be divorced again. This is the second time. I was married for 23 years.
Wow.
Wasn't expecting to be divorced. But the last 3 years that I've been divorced, I've really spent a lot of quality time with these kids. And you know, and I think, which was a very important time in their lives as they go through, you know, mid teens to late teens. And it's been blissful. It's been amazing, you know, but look, you can't be traveling around touring, filling up the bank account and living, giving them a great life. And it's somewhere it's got to give, man.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah.
Well, you know what I always wonder though, like when I hear about like actors saying, oh, I love acting and, you know, all the other stuff being away from the family, I don't like, right? How come you never see these actors? Like the ones like, let's say you live in Connecticut or some little town in Colorado, wherever, do local theater. Like I never hear like, you know, some big movie star I'm going to stay home for the summer, and we're going to put on A Streetcar Named Desire for $20 a ticket, because I just love
it's
to
because
act.
Of what he said.
What?
It's because of what he said. Everyone believes their job may be the last job.
Yeah.
I swear to God, like, I'm pals with, like, Mel and Liam Neeson, like even these guys. It's like, well, now they're getting to a point where Liam was making $25 million a movie.
I mean, that's in the stratosphere, like, right? I think he's got a gambling problem with some of the movies he's making.
Yeah, well, because they just keep throwing money at him. What does he care? He's 70 years old. Listen, he was Schindler.
Yeah. Yeah.
What else you got to do?
Right. But I mean,
I get it. You can act.
But when you're doing Taken 5, it takes away from
he's
Schindler.
Taking their money.
Movie Taken 5. Oh, yeah. Right.
I mean, how do you turn down $20 million? I don't care how rich you are.
Right. Yeah.
You'd be resting on Schindler when they're giving you Taken 5?
By the way, he did Schindler, nominated for an Oscar. Nobody really, he wasn't a movie star.
Yeah.
You know what made him a movie star? Because I was doing The Gray with him when Taken came out. And I was going to go right to video.
Wait, The Gray with the one with the wolf?
Is that, yeah.
You were in that too?
Yeah, it's him and me, him. Yeah, that was like the big breakout for me as far as big movies.
It's a great one. It was a great one.
Yeah, it was a great movie.
Yeah. So what was the movie that made him start?
Taken came out, and it was, talk about B-movies. This was a time when there really were B-movies. Yeah. And it was going straight to DVD. And then in the last minute, they got a theatrical release, and it was a humongous hit.
Awesome.
Globally.
Movie. Yeah.
He's off to the races. So you kind of never know what's going to be good and what's not going to be good.
Yeah. Man.
He's all over the map. You were in Billions, right? One of my favorite shows.
I've never seen it.
Never seen it.
I'm friends with Giamatti, and they called me and they said, we got a cool role, artists. It has nothing to do with what they do. And with Maggie and three episodes. And I said, oh, I love these guys. They're good. I'm friends with Damien. I'm like, I'm going to go to New York. I get to go to New York, see my family. And three episodes somehow turned into 8 episodes. But I've yet to see any of the episodes.
Okay, so that's my next question. Do you watch what you do?
If I produce it, like my partner and I, we did a movie, Boss Level and Wheelman, and I'm very involved in the editorial part of it. So I see every inch of that. A lot of stuff I don't see. There's probably 60-70% of the stuff I've done I don't see.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how was your experience on that? I just see like a lot of dialogue. And as the older I get, right, and I don't know if you have this problem, do you have a problem memorizing lines?
No. No, no, no. Because I don't memorize lines, right? I'll read a script, whether it's bad or good, and sometimes it's fucking painful. I'll read a script 50 times, easy.
50 times.
50 times.
Wow. Because
then the circumstance is so embedded in your brain, when you look at the words, they naturally fall into a sequence, right? So you don't have to remember anything. And I learned that I was on a soap opera in my 20s, Guiding Light, and you did a script a day. It's like 70 pages a day.
Wow.
So
my
acting coach taught me how not to learn lines.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you learn the story. So you have to read a lot, I have a script in every room, and I'll sit down and I'll just pick it up, and wherever I open it up, I'll just start reading. So I'm not thinking, it doesn't have to be chronological either, because you don't shoot chronologically. So you want to take it from different places so that whenever I know.
I'm sitting there.
No.
The guy's going to go to get the money. The guy's going to get the money.
Your stand-up is a show, right? And there's a sequence that you... And one thing takes you to another thing, and then the way you do it, you come all the way back to that first thing and at the end, and you wrap it all up, and it's fucking hysterical. That's the story.
Yeah.
That's how you do it. It's the same way, man.
Yeah, but you know, with stand-up, it's a story that I am just regurgitating with my own words. And I'm like retelling an experience that I lived, right? The trouble I've had with acting is taking those skill sets that I've learned in stand-up and applying them to the acting world. And I talk to a lot of actors just because the line thing is a problem for me, because I'm sitting there always in my head of like, oh, okay, now it's my turn.
Right.
Rather
than
just
exactly
like,
the wrong way to do it.
Yeah.
But it's so common. That's exactly, you know, listen, you haven't been acting since you're 12, right?
Yeah.
But you need, as soon as you get in your head that you have to do something, your mind will go the other way,
mm-hmm.
right? And so if I have to learn these lines, I'm going to do everything in my power not to learn these lines. My mind is going to do everything not to learn these lines.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to read it like a speech, like you're going to get up in front of people and, you know, you're at Procter & Gamble and you're going to talk about soap, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So try it, because you seem to get every movie that I want to be in. next time you are, try reading a lot, like reading it over and over. Like even if it's boring, read the script 20 times.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. No, I'll have to try that. I'm always looking for tips.
Yeah. No.
to get this right, because I get really, really nervous. I
know.
When
you're not alone.
I go on these sets for the first time.
Yeah.
Working with people that have done this over
forever,
and over,
and they do it in their sleep.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it, you know, I can, again, watching movies, I could always tell when somebody doesn't know their lines, or has, that's a cut that they finally got to take where the guy got through it,
mm-hmm.
or it's been, I can see they're going back and forth. They didn't really want to do that, but it's the only way they could get the conversation to flow, because the guy couldn't remember his lines. I've been around guys who are iconic actors. But they're sweating. I'm gonna fucking make you feel even worse. Watch this. I know your lines and mine.
Acting is like, even like I've written on some sitcoms, and when you're doing the live shoot, you know, you give somebody like a line on the spot, and then like the actor will, it's so, the acting etiquette is like, I don't really act, you know, but like I like to write. And sometimes I'll be telling like another writer, I'm like, I just want to tell this guy how to fucking say this line.
Just throw it away. Just say, do nothing.
But like, I don't even want to do that charade bullshit. Right. I want to literally say, watch it. Do it like this. Blah, blah, blah.
Right. You want to give him line readers.
As I've like been on the side, and then they go to do your line, I'm looking at the guy going, does he not know sarcasm at all? Like, holy shit, you know? But
that's one of my early jobs was Gary David Goldberg, who created the show with Michael J. Fox. And I did a show with him that Spielberg produced. It was their first TV show, DreamWorks. And it was in front of a live audience. I'd have never done that sitcom in front of a live audience. And you'd work it out during the week. And then Friday you get there and there's people there.
Yeah.
And it was like, holy, this is fun. And I was terrible in the beginning. Yeah. I didn't get the hang of it. As soon as I got my first laugh. By the way, that was another thing. When you make people laugh, it's like, oh, what? That's a feeling that I've never, like, I can make my friends laugh, tell them stupid stories, but when you make people in an audience laugh.
Yeah, it's fun.
Wow.
Yeah, especially when you're doing those kind of things. That's the other flip side, too. Sometimes I'll write something and an actor will come in and do it in a way I didn't even envision it, and it's way better.
That's
and
what it should be.
Like, that's how I'm like, yeah, now here we go.
That's what everything, it should always be elevated. As good as it is, it should, that's what the actor's job is to elevate it always. Exhausting.
I'd rather dig a ditch than sit in a room with a script and go, hello, 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 hello. Like,
but he's,
I don't know.
He's saying that's not how you do it.
Right.
You read it, right. And then the hello.
50 times, by the way.
Yeah. And the hello just comes out.
Right. By the way, you're not even thinking about it. But I've been on sets
hard work,
where, you know, it's the physical too. Like, people don't connect their heads and their bodies. And where the mind goes, the body follows. So if you're not right in the mind, if the action is you come over and you pick up this cup, you'll see people go. And I'm like, really?
Yep.
And they'll look at the cup when they pick it up. I'm like, just pick the cup up.
That's why you're you, Frank. That's why you're you. I'm this guy. I'm the... Oh. Is there anyone? I got one last one. Sorry. Have you ever acted, and I know you've acted with so many great people, so I don't want to disclude the others, but wait, one particular person where you're like, holy shit, this person's unbelievable.
Yeah, there's been a bunch, but maybe because I was a big fan of his too, but when I did the movie with Mel, you're talking to him, and then he's on set and he starts doing his thing and you're like, oh, he's a movie star. He's a movie star. Like, you're like, wow, man. I mean, I think I'm heterosexual, but I'm really attracted to him. Yeah. I mean, he's a movie star. Like, I've worked with a lot of great actors that are not movie stars, and they shouldn't, like, they're not movie stars. Yeah. But every once in a while, like, oh, Bruce Willis, too. I've done a couple movies with Bruce early, and I'm like, oh, man, this guy's electric. Like, oh my God. It's
really,
because I like to say, oh man, I'm as good as that guy. I'm as good as that. Like, you know, because I'm a competitive guy. Yeah. And it's like, you get on set with people like this, you're like, oh, I get it. That's why he's got Planet Hollywood. I get it.
Oh,
and, you know, the guy's a star.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're saying there's like an aura these guys
there
have,
is something, right? And I hate to be the guy to say that. I swear to God, that kills me. A little piece of me dies to repeat this, but there's something about these people.
Yeah.
And you're just like, wow, good for you,
man.
Can I borrow some
been
money?
In the presence of Tom Cruise?
Yeah, I did a movie with Tom Cruise.
So
Minority Report.
You were in Minority, bro.
No, but let me tell you the story real quick. I don't want to bore you guys.
We're not bored. This is riveting, bro.
I go audition for Steven Spielberg. Right, yeah. For Minority Report,
jeez.
Which is a script written by, I think, Steve Zaillian. I think it was like one of those writers that are like, you just go. I get the role, right? My agents at the time were UTA. They were like, Spielberg just loves you. Like, he's like, this is great. This is like a big deal. And I'm like, yeah. And Tom Cruise, and it was when Colin Farrell had just kind of hit the scene, and it was like a great cast. Janusz Kaminski was shooting the movie. It was, you know, Oscar-winning DP. And
Viggo Mortensen was already doing something else.
He's probably in that movie, too. In any event, I'm there 6 months. We'd shoot the movie all over the place, 6 months. And, you know, the part of the movie I'm in is a very specific, you know, set, right? And there's different parts of that movie. And every once in a while, I'd look at Spielberg, and he looked unsure. And I'm like, there's no way they could cut the whole thing out of the movie. Because that's what happens in movies. You get cut out sometimes. Cut to this. I do the movie. Great experience. Become friends with Colin, and we had a lot of interaction with Tom, and it was, you know, Tom's Tom. So they invite me to the screening, to the premiere. I take my mother. My mother's never been to a premiere. My little Italian mother's never been to a premiere. So I go. We sit. My mother and I sit in a great spot. Steven is coming down. He makes a speech. As he's coming up, now I'm sitting around big movie stars and big agents. As he's walking up, he sees me and he stops. He goes, Frank. Like, is like Stallone here or something? I don't know. And he walks past people and gives me a hug. And my mother, I said, Steven, this is my mother. He goes, oh, it's so nice to meet you. I enjoy the movie. And he walks away. And I'm like, and everybody's looking at me. I'm like, right? I'm watching the movie, and about 30 minutes in, I realize the set piece that was really the most thing that I'm in, and it should have been what was 30 minutes of the film, is not there. It was cut out.
They cut the whole thing out.
They cut the piece out, right? But I'm watching, and then I'd see, you know, pieces of what was the set piece, and then at the very end, when I was shooting the movie, Steven wanted me to do this Indiana Jones look where I turn into the camera and look right down the barrel, right? And I take the helmet off, and that was the only thing. I took the helmet off and I looked down the barrel and I said something, and that was it. So all the credits go up, and there's a feeling I can't even describe to you, because I'm so gutted, and I just don't understand what just happened, right? And this is why I love my mother. She looks over to me and she goes, you were the best part of the movie. I swear to God. Didn't say another word.
Yeah.
Didn't say another word. Rest her soul.
Wow.
But that took me a year to get over. And so there's things like that where it's like, it's just, you know.
Did you go to the party after the movie?
No, I went to my own party. Yeah, it was terrible. It was terribly embarrassing. And then I come to realize everybody's got that story.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, everybody's got that story.
So let me rewind here. Does Cruise, we often talk about Cruise on this show. Does he have the electric?
Like, God. He has it more than anybody.
So when you're around him, the wattage is unbelievable.
I don't get intimidated by people.
Yeah.
He's intimidating.
Really?
Or I'm intimidated by him. One of the two. But he is like, man, he is. There's nobody like Tom Cruise. He is by far the biggest movie star I think that's ever walked the planet.
Yeah, man.
And one talk about prepare, he does everything. He's amazing. Anybody has anything, regardless of his personal life,
because
I don't really care what he does. Right. I mean, you know, he can have sex with donkeys for all I care. Right. It's not my business.
Right. Lucky donkey.
Ha 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 ha! He's the guy. It's no accident. It's no accident.
God.
And he's still doing it. He's 63 years old. I mean, the guy's I've been watching him since I was a kid.
I just got to piece this together. On set with him, is he like goofing around with you? Hey, Frank, did you see the game last night? Or is it all? Is it all business?
Not goofing ever. It's like he'll come on set every day and go, "We're making a movie." Good to see you, Frank. Did you have a good night? Oh, I'm so excited. Today's going to be great. Wow. You were great yesterday. Like, that's his vibe with everybody.
Man,
he knows everyone's name.
Scientology kicking in, man.
You know what? Sign me up.
Me too, Frank. What are we doing?
Sign me up.
Did you see him doing the jump ropes
He's got the train, everything.
What does he do?
He does jump ropes right before the
scene. No, he works out. I mean, he used to. But,
right on set, they say, I've heard. Is that true?
Yeah, he's got a trailer bigger than Equinox. Like, it's ridiculous. Trainer's there, and he's... You never seen a guy like this. Like it's like he's an alien. He's not real. It's amazing.
I want to see a picture of him sleeping. Do you think he sleeps?
He doesn't. Last night, my son and I put on the Formula One. Netflix has a Formula One show, and I'm watching. You know, they're in the Mercedes. They're in their whatever camp, whatever they call the thing. And there he is.
Right.
Lewis Hamilton is there, and there's Tom Cruise. I'm like, the guy is everywhere.
Do you think there's ever been a moment in your life, ever, where in that exact moment, you were doing something better than Tom Cruise?
No, never. Never, ever. Not even close. And by the way,
right now,
at his worst.
He's doing all cast.
Yes. Yes, he's doing. Finally.
You're a fucking good dude, bro.
Yeah, no, we often talk about these guys. I really haven't been in the presence of someone that, they say that about Brad Pitt. You ever been around him?
Yeah, but he's a different guy. He's a little more, also brilliant guy, and, you know, a little more laid back from when I've been around him.
Yeah.
And he's got it down. You know, he's bright. These guys, you know, I remember reading that book, Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, there's no accident to success, right? People go, you got lucky. I'm like, no, he didn't.
Yeah.
It's maybe he got lucky a little bit. Luck ain't carrying you to become Brad Pitt,
right?
And so I'm just fascinated by because I know how difficult it is to even be a working actor. Like, you know, what it takes to become that thing.
Yeah.
Then again, it's all consuming. Like, his relationship with his kids isn't like your relationship with your kids.
Yeah.
And you're a big star. Like, you're at the top of the food chain in comedy.
Oh, yeah.
But these guys are, there's something else. I mean, they're like, I can't explain it, you know?
It's that laid back thing, you know? Like, that because, you know, he did Interview with a Vampire with Tom Cruise. And never worked with him again because Tom Cruise probably came on and said, "We're making a movie." Brad Pitt's like, "Last one with me."
Yeah. And it's tough. You put two guys like that together.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Dude, that's what you are to us.
No.
Like, these guys you're talking about, you got that glow.
Get out of here.
Right? Like, as soon as you
I couldn't be more regular, excuse me, blue collar, damaged. Regular, I come from. Dad, should I rake the lawn? Dad, these guys have been acting since they're seven.
Well, you talk about acting, and were you always in the acting world?
I threw a ball when I was a kid.
Okay, so how do we get from wheelbarrow, immigrant parents, ball to start? Were you ever a 9-to-5er?
No, I worked on, when I was in college, I worked on Wall Street for a minute. And that's when I was like, I'll never do this, right? Because I went to school for finance. And I was cute when I was young. So I got approached by like different modeling people in New York. And that kind of started this, that, and a third. And then they started offering me commercials. And then I was like the Budweiser guy or the Coors guy.
Oh,
yeah. And then I was like, wait a minute. And then people kept asking me if I was an actor. I'm like, I'm an actor. Yeah. And then... instead of fucking around, I took all that money and I found the best acting coaches I could in New York. And New York, unlike LA, has great acting coaches. And I kind of submersed myself into it and got obsessed. And then I got offered a soap opera and took it. And my friends were like, "What are you doing? Don't do that." I'm like, "It's $2,500 a day. They're guaranteeing me 3 days a week. That's right there, more money than my father's ever made in a year. I'm taking it." And I did. And, you know, whatever. I did a soap opera for a couple of years, and I met my wife.
I put that little weather vane that you got at the antique fair, I put that on the roof. I painted the whole thing red.
You love me.
Yes.
So it was good.
Yeah.
Did your friends, were they kind of the 9-to-5 guys? Are you one of the guys that were
9-to-5 guys, but the friends that I had made then, because I was in acting and I was doing little plays, I had a little group of New York friends that were theater guys and would never do a soap opera. Right. Meanwhile, I've never seen them again.
Right. yeah.
Which one went to Juilliard? Which one went to NYU Theater? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where are they? They're selling BMWs.
Right.
And here I am with you.
That's it, baby. Talking about houses, multiple.
Hey, Jimmy, I hope you're listening, pal.
So, you being older like we are, social media, you seem to be very active on it. You do a thing on social media. I don't know if it's planned, but I don't know if you've seen his social media. He'll put up the phone and then he'll put the record on and he'll go, oh, hey.
I'm the dumbest person I know.
That's a great little shtick.
Like the phone interrupted.
Yeah, exactly. Right? You want to know something funny? I've been doing this now for a couple of years, right?
Yeah.
And I swear to God, people text me and they'll write me and they'll say, hey, did you not know the camera was on?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God. Don't vote. Please don't vote. Don't have kids.
There was one post he made, right? Which was, it caught me by surprise. You're in like a convertible. I think you drive a convertible, right? Was it a convertible?
I have a Bronco and I have another. Yeah, I have a couple cars that have no top.
Okay, yeah, no top.
So he's doing this video.
Bronco, of course he has a Bronco.
Of course, why wouldn't you? He goes, something guys you know and live in Los Angeles, you could go downtown and get flowers for cheaper than you would, at Conway's or where, Conroy's, whatever the hell it is. And he's got a bouquet of flowers in the passenger seat, which was the complete antithesis of like this, right?
I love flowers.
Really?
Yeah.
So when you buy flowers,
yeah,
do you go home and arrange them?
Oh my God. When you come over to you guys will come. I have fight nights all the time. You guys got to come. I live right around the corner.
Oh man.
I have flowers everywhere. They make me very happy.
They keep you from beating people up?
Right.
That's what I'm getting at, right?
No, they keep me. There's something about flowers that I've always just, I feel good about them. Right. I do. I like buying them.
And you plant them?
No, they're dead.
You buy the ones that just sit around. It's like you buy yourself flowers like a man.
No, I don't just buy flowers. I go to the flower mart in downtown LA where there's a lot of bad, not nice people.
Yeah.
And
that is crazy that you get. It's very peculiar, man.
By the way, you can go to Bristol Farms down the street and buy a little bouquet of sunflowers. You know sunflowers?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
$23.
Right.
I go down, I could fill up my truck for $23 and they're 10 times better.
Yeah.
So this
whole flower thing is fascinating because Lana, my wife, says, you know, we should have some flowers around the house. It makes you feel a certain way.
It does.
My question to you is, who turned you on to flowers? And there's something that you just did it?
I like when my wife and I, we bought a house in the Palisades, right? Mm-hmm. I decorated the house. I did everything. I bought the whatever vase that I left there. Whatever painting on the wall, I bought everything. I designed the house. Like
too
I love.
Much. I would never marry you. You do. You're too much.
No,
you're
I love.
You never relax.
I cut my kid's hair.
Yeah.
Holy fucking! Does he
just to take
I cut my
back.
Kid's hair. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, now they're older, so they're like, "Don't come near me with a scissor." But I cut their hair. I love to cut hair.
Right.
I love flowers. Yeah. I love interior design. Okay.
Yeah, it's too much.
Do you build? Could you?
Of course,
could,
he builds.
No.
What do you
mean? It's one thing I do not do.
Oh, really? I would have begged him for like a tool belt on a Saturday.
I got all the tools. I got a bandsaw. I got everything.
Right.
And my guys come over and they could use my tools. But I found that in LA, you can go to Home Depot and there's like a bunch of Mexican guys who are amazing carpenters, mm-hmm. and they're grateful for the work, and they not curse, they don't, you know, they're not angry when they, you know, hit their hand with the nail, and right. and they do a fantastic job, and right. I've had so many guys come to my house and do beautiful work, and right. I've saved myself agita.
Wow. Yeah. I'm surprised by that.
Yeah.
He's having Mexican guys build a shed while he's arranging flowers.
Wow.
I
mean, what the exactly heck? Right.
It's like the head of a mafia in a movie or something, right?
By the way, they're the best. They're great people, and I love the fact that, listen, they need the money, right? Yeah. They need the money, and they got families, and they wind up coming to my house. I become friends with them, and then sometimes I got one guy there, my friend Melvin, doesn't speak a lick of English. My girlfriend now is from Brazil, so she speaks Spanish. So the whole, I don't even know what they're talking about. And evidently, I ordered a little.
Can I just point out, you say you're a regular guy, you're not like those movie stars that said, you're dating a 35-year-old Brazilian?
No, bro, 30.
30.
Yeah, bring it down. Somebody recently said to me, she's 30? When she's 45, I'll be on my next girlfriend. Now, I've learned something from her, and this is a beautiful thing, to be a man who could still, you know, my father's right. looking down at me going, good for you.
Now, to stay in the shape and be have women that age be attracted to you, right? You say, like, you filmed in Croatia, right? So I would imagine you've spent a lifetime on movie sets of getting up before sunrise and working out before you go to the
Always.
Movies, right?
Yeah.
So I would imagine there's been some running in some dicey neighborhoods around the world in your lifetime.
Yeah, dicey gyms, dicey neighborhoods.
So, like, when you're running in Croatia, hypothetically, 5:30 in the morning, knowing your skill set, is there a part of you like, it would be nice to get mugged right now just to break up the day?
Listen, here's the deal. I'm also, you know, we're from New York. You walk past somebody, you look them right in the face.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, I'm running past you. I'm like, what? What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Shoot me? If you shoot me, you shoot me. But other than that, you got
to. So where was the most dangerous place you ever felt? Like, not the set, but like
Africa.
Being there.
Really? Yeah. When I went to Africa. South Africa. Yeah, when I did a movie in Cape Town, and I was like, the sun hadn't come up, and Cape Town kind of looks like LA. And I leave the hotel, and I'm running past the desk, and he goes, excuse me, sir, where are you going? I said, I'm going to go for a run. He goes, no run. I go, why no run? He goes, you're white. No run. I go, oh, no run. No, he goes, no, very dangerous.
Whoa.
And that kind of made me a little nervous, like I was in Africa. So I did go running.
You did?
I did not go running again after that. I got it, because there were a lot of people outside.
But you went running after he said that?
Yeah. I went out the back.
Look at that. No one tells Frankie G you can't run.
The guy
right?
was right. I'm like, maybe I'm in over my head. There's only so much jujitsu you can do.
Someone tells me don't go running and I'm in Ohio, I go back to my
room. And pack. Yeah. If I'm someplace where I can't run, I'm leaving that place immediately, right? It's freaking.
The other thing is, I'm always crying too. Like, I could be that guy, and then I'm at home all the time crying. I cry over everything.
Oh, my God. Bro. Did we guys separate it at birth?
I cry. No. My kid. I have a son who's 19. He's going to he's been in special schools his whole life. He petitioned to go to Pali High his last year, senior year. He got in, and they had a program, and he graduated from Pali High, and he was so proud of himself. What's that?
What's that school?
Pali High. Palisades High School.
Oh.
Big school, right? So now he's going to this program. He's in college. He's going to this program that UCLA offers. It's called Pathways. And it's partially, it's life skills, because we need him to be independent, and then education. And he's having a difficult time, like, accepting, like, what's going on.
Yeah.
And when I tell you, he talks to me, and I go, it's going to be fine. And I got to go in the bathroom, and I'm like, you know, because you're only as happy as your least happy child. Period. And so if I know my son is feeling bad about something, or I can't take, it's like, right. I fold.
Yeah,
I really do. And my ex-wife, God bless you, she's an amazing mother. She kind of picks up the slack, because I'll let them do, I'll say, you can stay home with me. I'll buy you a pet shop. I'll buy you, what's put that pet store? I'll do 3 Nicolas Cage movies, and I will buy you that Petco. Because he loves animals.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I'm like, don't worry about it. You're not going to go, you know, sell widgets.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So do you feel like you have to be, I mean, are you one to cry around your kids, or is that a moment for you that you got to like, let me regroup. They can't really see that daddy's having a tough time with this, or do you just...
That's a great question.
How do you...
Both. You know, today, I'm going to bring you guys really way down now. A year ago to the day, he's my biological cousin, my father's brother's son, but we grew up in the same house. A year ago today, he shot and killed himself. He left my house on a Thursday and shot himself on Saturday. And we slept in the same bed together. And so I want to make it an open dialogue in my house about what this is, what suicide is and how it affects the family. And they see me cry about it, you know? But other things... where I'm crying and it relates to them, never. I don't let them see. I'm not kidding you when I tell you, I'm always crying. Yeah. Like, I'm amazed at my children, as we all are. And it's terrible, but when they see a little bit of suffering, I can't deal with them suffering.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I hear you.
But I don't want them to see, because I don't want them to get nervous about themselves.
What about the reverse one? Do you let them see, because this is the one I do, the happy cry, when you're just so happy in a moment with your family?
Absolutely. Yeah. If that happens, absolutely. Yeah. We're Italian, man. I mean, we're emotional people, you know, and sometimes too emotional.
Yeah.
But they see it all, you know. Yeah. And I've apologized to my children a lot, too, because... I stopped drinking about a year ago, but before that, I mean, I was drinking a bottle of wine a day, right?
Wow.
And it affects your behavior. I didn't think so, because I only drank wine, rosé.
For the cholesterol.
Yeah, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then I have to apologize, you know, and I think that's important, too, like to let your kids know you've made mistakes and it's okay. Like, I'm sorry I behaved that way. I'm sorry I said that. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. I was being sarcastic.
Funny, because I share the same sensitivity you do, in the sense that, not that I'm crying every day, but I'm more apt to crying than my wife.
Right.
Right. And I never saw that growing up. My father was not crying at all. But now he's crying.
All the time.
Right.
How old is your father?
77.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know if he, in his older age, has clicked into a sensitivity that he never had access before, but I've always had access to it. And I wonder sometimes if your kid sees you crying, which I don't hide it. There's no way I could hide it, because it comes and it's like, it's
right.
Daddy.
It's involuntary.
Daddy's crying.
Yeah.
Why is he crying?
Yeah.
So I've often gone, oh, is this, because again, as a man, just there's a connotation of you, especially growing up the way I did.
Me too.
You know, you don't cry.
No, what are you crying for? No. Are you a baby?
Yeah.
They used to call you, by the way, this was before woke.
Right.
So my father would call me things that were not nice.
Wow. You're clipping flowers and crying at the same time. And then you're going off and making a Nick Cage movie.
By the way,
what the fuck is going on?
By the way, if you are out there buying flowers, and this is you listen to me. Always clip the bottom of the flowers.
Yeah.
Always clip the bottom of the flowers on an angle before you put them in the vase.
Now, when you fill up the vase, you fill it with water, or do you just use your teardrops?
No, because salt isn't good for the flowers.
You're also the last man I've seen with a pompadour. I love it.
No, I just came from the gym.
I love the way it bounces.
No,
when
you talk. It's dirty.
Is that your hair, or did you have transplants? Honest to God,
Brian Callen.
Yeah, look, I've had transplants. They took it from here and
really,
put it, yeah, here. But they're it's falling. The stuff. It's falling out, not the transplant, the other hair. So I might have to redo it. I'm just asking you. Your hair has its own life, right?
Yeah, and I never dye it.
It should have its own Twitter handle.
I never put any color in it either.
That's 58, and that's it.
Oh, that's amazing. I don't know about that one. I think Rillo just lied.
I
wish we had a lie detector.
On my children's eyesight.
I know it's your hair and I love it, but never with the men's hair club.
Never.
I'm going through your garbage tonight.
Ask anyone who really knows me.
Wow.
Never. I mean, I've dyed my hair when I was a kid for a movie, but never. I don't.
Yeah, your beard's pretty dark still, too.
Yeah,
man.
It's got gray.
Man, dude.
I'm not good. My father died. He was 73 years old. He had black. He looked like Elvis.
So are you taking like some sort of
fish
pill?
I take everything anybody says to take.
All right.
No. I take peptides.
You even got the De Niro birthmark on the right side below the thing.
And on the other side.
Jeez, you lucky guy. You look in the mirror and go, I'm so, look at that.
I'm going to leave you on this, and I got to ask you, what brand of t-shirt is that? It phenomenal. Isn't it? It's a deep V, and it just kind of flows off the body.
I don't know. Any of my clothes are from films, so I don't
know.
You just take it from the set? What's the deal? What's it? Oh, okay. In the deal, whatever you wear.
In my deal, yeah.
Wow. I'm stealing t-shirts going.
No, just put it in your deal.
Yeah. Deal. What the fuck? I'm barely getting money for these movies. Put it in the deal. Listen, bro. It's been my pleasure.
And I was so excited when you reached out. I was like, oh, I'm such a big fan. And it's just like, I watch you guys all the time. I've seen every comedy special you've done. And we met a while back and have mutual friends. And I was just so jazzed to come on.
Well,
bro,
we appreciate you taking the time out. And, I don't say this to a lot of people, but we're always looking for new friends, right? And even though we're 50, 58 years old, whatever we are, we do a lot here at the house.
Great.
When it comes to entertaining. We'd love to have you and your 30-year-old Brazilian girlfriend come over. We'd love to learn some Portuguese.
Don't forget to bring flowers.
I was telling him I was going to bring, because when you're an Italian from the East Coast, you had coffee and cake. My mother, what's happening? We're having coffee. Who's coming? We have company. Right. We're having coffee and cake. And there was always an Entenmann's crumb cake or Fryhofer if they could afford it. And so I went to the grocery store to get an Entenmann's crumb cake. And they didn't have the thing in it.
It's hard. It's hard to find out here.
Terrible. Yeah.
So if Frank comes to a party, you guys can step off for a little while and go cry in a corner. And then that's what
I'm hoping we get Frank to cry in front of, because my Lana don't cry. Even when I cry, I'm crying, but I have the wherewithal to look at her going, this ain't making you cry.
Right, I know.
Right? Because
I'm breaking down.
Yeah, like when I see somebody cry, generally speaking, I follow suit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And my wife don't have that ability to do that. So
yeah.
I want to have you come over, tell a story, you cry.
I tear up.
And I want to see if she cries when you cry. That would be the test.
She doesn't cry when I cry. I mean, my whole face just goes, I go. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's contorted.
I believe it, bro. You don't even audition anymore. You just get offers. Yeah. Offer only. Offer only. Get the memo.
Yeah.
You buy a Ferrari when you want to be someone. You buy a Lamborghini when you are someone.
The show has ended.
Oh, man.
I have flowers everywhere. They make me very happy.
They keep you from beating people up?
No!